Well, here on The Business Show on Biz News, I'm Alec Hogg. Werner de Jager is the chief executive of Cashbuild, and he joins us now on a day when he's in the spotlight, Cashbuild's in the spotlight. Your financial results for the year just passed. And I love talking about Cashbuild, not because I've got such a long history with some of your predecessors, but because you guys are so important, such an important barometer of what's going on in the real economy, in the actual where the tacky hits the tar. Just for those who've never heard of Cashbuild before, of course, there won't be many of them, just explain to us what you do.
I think, yeah, we're a retailer of basic building materials and all you need to build a house, not too many fashionable items, but the basics you need to build a house. And we focus on the middle, lower income groups of the country. We have 318 stores and we serve the communities where they need the building material.
And if you were to break down the difference or the allocation between rural areas and urban areas, how big or what is that ratio?
So our business, when you look at province, Gauteng is our biggest revenue province, but there's also big township areas in Gauteng where the Soweto's and the Mamelodi's and Tembisa's, where we do have quite a number of stores where we do well. So it's a fairly even split, although the store numbers in the rural areas are slightly higher, but the average revenue for stores in the more rural areas is a bit lower than in the metro areas.
And another feeling before we go into the state of the nation as seen through the eyes of Cashbuild, what is the difference between Bucky Builders and do-it-yourself builders as far as your customer base is concerned?
So the Bucky Builders are really generalists. You know, they're painters. They can do additions to your house, add a room. They really do a lot of different services. And I mean, I myself use a Bucky Builder when I do renovations at my home. So they straddle the spectrum of customers in South Africa. Whilst the DIY, and in our case, a lot of build-it-yourself customers, people that'll take 5 years to build their own home. And that's what the core difference is. So it's really not that the DIYs are not skilled, but the Bucky Builders does it for a living.
I'm more referring to the allocation of your revenues on how it breaks down between those two categories.
Yeah, so we don't have a good measure of tracking the difference, but we did some research, and it's about 65% of our revenue is derived from the Bucky Builders, But in terms of number of customers, it's just inverse. About 70% is DIY customers, but only 30% Bucky Builders having a higher basket.
So the real story of Cashbuild and the real story of South Africa is often you get people who have homes far away from the cities and they send money home and then build their homes or build their houses there. And clearly they would be your customers in the main. How's that market been doing in the past financial year?
Yeah, it's a good business for us. We actually have a product, what we call Send a House Home, where you can come and pay for your materials in the city or in Gauteng where you work, and then the materials are actually delivered from one of our stores in the rural areas where some of the traditional homes are. And that's been very good business this year.
And give us a sense of the kind of customer who would do that, just so that we, again, get some flavor.
Yeah, it's interesting. We typically see it's more the young professionals that would work in the city and would send money home to their parents out in the more traditional areas. We even sometimes find that young guys that's moved into professional jobs in London and all of that would send money from overseas back to their parents in the traditional areas and then help them better their houses.
Okay, so we've got a good sense of from the financials how you did in the past year. A 5% like-for-like revenue growth. I've got to ask you this. Why is the financial year to the 29th of June and not to the 30th of June?
So we work on weeks, retail calendar weeks. So we cut off on the last Sunday of June, basically every year. And that's where the phenomena comes from that we had last year, where we actually need to catch up a few of those days that you lose over the year. So last year, we actually closed on the 30th of June, and we had a 53rd week, and hence the reference to the comparable period, because we only traded 52 weeks this year.
And what's the inflation rate in building products in South Africa?
Yeah, so our inflation that we measure on our basket was 1.7% this year. And at the outset, it's calculated on our weighting of our basket. And we do 23% of our basket is cement. That's our biggest selling product. And we saw only 0.3% inflation in that product category. On steel and steel-related products, which is also a good 10% out of our business, there was actually a deflation of 2.5% on our basket. So if you count the basket, that's why our inflation this year was quite low.
Interesting you mentioned those two, because there are two companies that are also closely watched in those areas, starting off with Afrimat, which has now bought the cement plant in Lichtenburg. Are you seeing any improvement coming out of their operation?
So we've worked with them and relisted them earlier in this financial year, or the calendar year actually, and we're doing good business with them. So, but I do think the plant was not in a great state. We their predecessors just couldn't deliver the cement to us on a consistent basis. So, but now they seem to have sorted all that issues out.
Relisting, explain that.
Yeah, we used to deal with Lafarge and the predecessor, and we stopped dealing with them because of the inconsistency. And when Afrimat took over, they came to see us, and we relisted the product into our business and started buying cement from them again.
How do they compete with cement? Is it on a price basis against the other cement providers?
Yeah, it's prices. Prices is an important factor, especially in our market. You know, a lot of our consumers are just walking into the store asking for the cheaper cement. But quality also plays a role, and I think they've positioned themselves that they've got a good quality product at a competitive price, and hence they can compete.
Well, that's good news for Afrimat shareholders. Of course, many in the BizNews tribe are following our model portfolio where we've got it. Excepting has gone down by 30%. I think we should have had Cashbuild instead. But ArcelorMittal and their problems in the long steel business in Newcastle, is that going to affect you at all?
Yeah, it did during the year. We struggled at some point to get corrugated iron and especially IBR from our suppliers. We don't deal with AMSA directly, but we do buy from the likes of a Max Steel and those type of steel merchants in the country. And they battle to have product for us. So it does indirectly affect us. And the bigger worry is the closure that will affect a lot of jobs that has potentially customers that's not going to be shopping at our Newcastle store and a few stores in that area.
Mm. It does have a knock-on effect in ways that many people would not kind of realize. But you also described that there were challenging economic conditions. Just unpack that for us. How challenging relative to what you've seen in recent years?
So we're coming off very good times in post-COVID, so which was very good for us. But the last two or so years, you could see consumers are under pressure. We could just see that the number of feet into the store were dwindling, and people were not able to spend the type of money that they needed to spend. So unemployment that's going up forever is also not great for our business. And the fact that there's not infrastructure spend and the projects that's been talked about, is we don't see it happening. And hence for us, we're interested not necessarily in supplying those projects, but we're interested in people getting employed on those contracts and being able to have money in their pockets to spend in our stores.
Werner, are you worried about what you read or see on the closures, for instance, of Goodyear, of more retrenchments at Ford? Obviously, we've mentioned ArcelorMittal. Is this kind of thing something that you guys monitor closely? And is it worse now than anticipated?
But it is something that we take cognizance of. Fortunately, our business is quite widespread throughout the country, but it does certainly affect some of the stores in those areas. Interesting fact is that when the retrenchments happen, we normally see a bit of an uplift in the store because people have packages that they spend in our stores and some on their houses. But then on the longer term, it's detrimental to the business. So it is worrying. And it's things that we monitor and make sure in our store development and how we invest in stores, we certainly take that into account.
Tell us the story about P&L Hardware.
Yeah, it's been a challenging acquisition for us. We bought it just before COVID, and it was had some difficulties and didn't make the best decisions through the period where we didn't go to stores and really cashbuildized it. And I think that was part of our issue. We've since taken some strategic decision on the direction, and we're closing down some stores. We closed 11 this year. We're converting some of the more successful ones. We're changing into cashbuild small model stores, and that has worked for us. So we've had to take a big write-off on goodwill last year, and for this year, if you strip out closure costs and all of that, we're very close to break even. So strategy is working, but next year we'll hopefully see profitability from that business. But it's been a challenging acquisition for us.
And looking back, if you could have got into a time machine, would you still have done the deal?
I do believe so, yes. We would have just done a lot of things differently in understanding the ethos of what made the business do well, and not, I don't say be arrogant, but the thing that you can just paint the cash build model onto it and it'll work. We missed some of the detail and nitty gritty that made the business successful, the reason why they were in the market and who their customers were that were not necessarily cash build customers at that time.
How so?
Yeah, it is even we're focused on even a lower LSM than the cash build stores. Very more informal type operation. You know, cashbuild is used to being very formal process procedures, standard models, standard planograms, and in some research, it actually put some customers off. They like to walk into a store where they can scratch around a bit and talk to the manager and barter a bit and do his thing, and that's not what cashbuild typically does. So we did learn some lessons out of it.
Is it likely then that you, from those lessons that you've learned, that you might be opening new P&L hardware stores? In other words, you're going into you weren't that sure that it was a new market, but it clearly is a new market segment. Is there potential there?
Yes, indeed. We've since devised an alternative model for cashbuild, which we've termed an SMA store, small model store. And so we've actually, the ones of P&L that we converted into cashbuilds is these smaller model stores. And we've since then opened in places where we wouldn't have been able to open necessarily in the past, based on our footprint and our type of stores. So, you know, I'm thinking places like Tolo and Maclay and small rural areas in KZN where we would have typically tried to open a P&L. It's now open as a cashbuild small model store. And 6 of the 8 stores we've opened this year has actually been these smaller alternative model stores.
Just for context, how many outlets do you have now?
318 in total for the portfolio. Yeah, we've diversified slightly in terms of, like I said, on the SMSs. So if you look at it, we've got 29 of those model stores and 256 or 252 to be precise on the cashbuild side. Only 34 P&Ls left, and then we've got two stores that's called cashbuild extra stores that is existing stores that's got a bigger footprint where we've just added some more range into it and offer a bit of a wider range to attract some different customers. So we are working on the portfolio as well underlying to make sure we attract some additional customers.
Of course, shareholders are always delighted when management intervenes and does clever things which enhance the return to shareholders. We saw from Motus yesterday, in fact, their financial results. They unlocked a lot of cash flow. You did the same. You have been paying attention to certain parts of the business, which I think small business owners can also learn from. What exactly did you guys do to unlock so much cash flow and enable you to actually raise your dividend by a healthy amount?
I think, yeah, firstly, I must say the cutoff of the 53rd week does make it look a bit better than it actually is, because when we cut off on the 30th, we've already paid our suppliers, and in this year the suppliers only gets paid on the 30th, which is after cutoff. So there's a bit of an anomaly on the cash flow, but we've always been very cash positive. You know, we sell most of our product, and when I say most, 98% of the business is done on cash or card, which is not on credit. And so every time we open a store, we typically sell our products before we have to pay suppliers, and so the cash generation cycle is quite good. But we've also invested quite a bit let's call it IT, in terms of stock management, better forecasting, better stock ordering models, and paid a lot of attention to those type of things to make sure that we maximize. For our business, we don't really have debtors, so for us it's really about managing your stock cycle and your payment cycle.
That's a brilliant business model where people pay you cash, but they don't owe you money. In other words, they'll use a card, they use a card to pay cash, but not notes and coins necessarily, which can be quite expensive nowadays.
Yes, and that's something that's changed over the years in our business. When I started many years ago, about 60-70% of the business was real coins and notes, and that's come down below 50% now. So which is very interesting, and also, like you say, much cheaper than paying banking fees for cash.
10% growth in headline earnings per share, 10% increase in dividends. Is that repeatable in the year ahead, given these challenging conditions that South Africa finds itself in?
Look, yeah, it's early days. Promising the first 7 weeks after the financial year end, we saw revenues growing 6.5%. So gross margins being in place and some transaction lift as well. So we are positive, but it's a long year. So it would be wrong of me. I would be disappointed if we can't repeat it. But certainly, I don't want to stick my neck out and make predictions. But the year started well for us, and we hope we can continue the trend. All the initiatives we're working on and strategic initiatives for our business, it's very much top line focused. We know our cost control has always been very, very good. And so we just need to make sure we keep on getting customers into the store and selling.
And the unknowns, the black swans, the Trump tariffs and the impact, for instance, that it could have on the motor industry. Are you exposed to any of those issues that you can't really predict, but they could be pretty hectic for you?
Yes, indeed. I mean, when you look at the tariffs, we've already seen in Eswatini, where we did deal or still dealing with some of the fund beneficiaries that used to buy from us a lot. We're seeing some difficult times in the Eswatini stores. In Lesotho, we expect to see some tough times with various job layoffs that's going to happen there because of the funding that's been stopped and some tariffs that's been implemented. So we do think it'll have a effect on us. But at the end of the day, having a diversified portfolio does help us a bit. But it's not something that we sit back and relax on. We keep our eyes close to the action and follow and get good information from our regional managers that's out in the field.
So I guess what I take away from that comment is that you just got to stick to your knitting and let the big stuff happen. Just make sure that you do everything right that you can that's within your control.
That's correct, Alec. We also do sometimes make mistakes, but it's not if you make mistakes, you just need to fix them quickly. And I think that's the speed of execution is something we're focusing on. Because we know our strategy is there, our model is good. It's just about executing better than anybody else out there.
Bernard Diaco is the Chief Executive of CashBuild. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.